All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to turn this down. Hold on. It'll take me just a second.
Good afternoon, Thomas.
Good afternoon. Can we take like 15 seconds? The people are on your table and just smile at each other. Can we do the really big smiles on your mark, get set, go? They don't have to be genuine. They can be like really cheesy. That'll help me out a lot. Okay. I am completely overwhelmed and honored to be with you today. When Ron called me a few months ago, here's what he said. He said, I'm going to quote. He said, "Hey, Thomas, would you be available to, in May to speak at this thing we do in our district?" And before researching anything, I said, "Sure, I'd be glad to, Ron." And then come to find out, this is an amazing, awesome event. I feel completely a little bit out of my element here. This is a really neat conference. You have to answer a question for me, though. Is this your district assembly?
Yes.
Part of it. This is fantastic. I'm going to take this back to our district. I'm on the Joplin district. And this is incredible, man. This is how they should be. You guys are the model. Do you know if any other districts do something like this? This is fantastic. I've never heard of this before. This is great. So I am living proof that God qualifies the called and not calls the qualified, because I am definitely not qualified. We only know what we know, right? I mean, we only know what we know in our ministries or in our life, and we use what we know to help teach and add to the body of communication with everyone else. I've also decided that when I grow up, I want to be like Scott Daniels. That guy's awesome, man. That guy is totally legit. You guys, he's amazing. Okay, so power of story. He touched on some things this morning that I want to use with this setting boundaries with kids in ministry. The power of story. What's mine? Who am I? Who are the kids coming into our children's ministries? That's kind of what we're talking about. And then how can we create boundaries for them to behave in, to work and operate in, to have relationships with other kids in? And it's not just for kids. This is not limited to just kids. This is limited to our workers and our people that help us on Wednesday nights and Sunday mornings as well. The other thing about boundaries, this is a gigantic subject. This is huge. This is cutting edge, ground floor. We're talking about boundaries in ministry or boundaries with people, boundaries in relationships. This is huge. So we're just going to touch on a couple things today. Okay, so who am I? My name is Thomas Casper. How's it going? From Pittsburgh, Kansas. Pittsburgh Church of the Nazarene. I've only been a Nazarene for just over 6 years. That's how long I've been at that church. But I've been involved in various denominations over the course of my life, and I've seen a lot of different children's ministries, teen ministries, adult ministries, and how they work and operate with each other. And I'm kind of a sociologist in my mind a little bit. I love just watching people groups. One of my favorite things to do, especially today, was to sit out here in the chairs and just watch people interact with each other. Like, I love that type of stuff, to see how the facial expressions or how they interact when they talk. So that's partly that's me. Okay, so where do I come from? That's another question. My story began in 1977, when I was born. That's the year that Star Wars came out. And I'm a total nerd. I'm a geek. I love Star Wars. And 7 years ago, 8 years ago, when I started to pursue this idea of full-time ministry as a career, I actually thought I was going to work with teens. I mean, that's what I was going to school for, master's in youth ministry leadership. And I thought, man, I'm going to go work with teenagers. And then God said, no, you're not. You're going to go work with kids. And I thought he was crazy. But the truth is that I cannot see myself ever doing anything else. I love kids ministry. And it's probably something I'll be doing the rest of my life until I'm dead, is kids ministry and family ministry. Why am I a children's pastor? When someone said that you get to play with Legos and Pokemon and video games and do home visits and do mentoring, going fishing, coaching ball teams, teaching kids about Jesus, I was like, what? Absolutely. Are you serious? Like, the truth is, I haven't really worked a day in the last 6.5 years. I have not. I don't feel like I've worked at all. I would call it plurking, where you're playing and working at the same time and you get paid to do it. I do a lot of mentoring with kids, and I kind of have these, I don't know what you would call them, after school, it's not a program, it's just after school mentoring. I take young boys ages 8 to 10, and we go to Brahms, which is a nice local ice cream place, or we'll go to McDonald's or whatever. We just sit and talk about life, and we talk about what's going on in their families, and we just kind of get a gauge on where they're at and what they're doing, and then we'll play Pokemon or kickball, or I mean, seriously, that's not what we would consider work, right? But that's what we get paid to do, is building relationships with kids. And sometimes I feel kind of bad when I tell people what I do. I'm like, this is what I do. And I just told them that I played in this tournament of like Pokemon trading card game or something, you know, like with these young boys, and they're looking at me like, I don't really feel bad about that, actually. 4 years ago, and I'm going to tell you this part about me, just because I want you to know where I'm at. I'll be a little bit all over the place today, and that's okay. I do have, I was diagnosed 4 years ago with ADHD. I do take a pill, and I did take my pill today, so that's good. And my wife is sitting right there. She's really excited that I took my pill today, and you can ask her if you want to what I'm like when I don't. And you don't want to see that guy, because it really is all over the place. What this does is it gives me, gives kids no excuse in my ministry. They can't use the why of ADHD excuse with me, because I do too. Guess what? I take a pill, and I'm able to behave, sort of. Okay, you can sort of do that too. So it doesn't really give us an excuse. I heard this a long time ago, and it is true. Sometimes the most spiritual thing we can do is take our pills. And think about that. Just let that sit in, and that's not intended necessarily to be funny, but it is. Sometimes the most spiritual thing we can do is go to bed, take a nap, keep ourselves healthy. Because if we're not healthy, we can't help others try to be healthy as well. So I just say that right out front. So I do apologize in advance for jumping around. Also, you'll notice this will stay static. I don't have any notes. So for those of you that are note takers, and you're going to be freaking out because you love taking notes, you're just going to have to take notes based on what I say. So I apologize for that. For those of you that aren't note takers, you're celebrating inside, which is good, because I'm not really a note taker. That'd be my wife. One of the things about note taking, this I'm going to do a sidetrack real quick. I kind of, note taking for me is kind of like, hopefully I don't offend anybody when I say this, but note taking for me is kind of like crafts at Sunday school. They are awesome. They're like, yeah, this craft is going to be so amazing. Their mom is going to love it. And where do the crafts end up most of the time? In the trash or in the refrigerator to be thrown away within a half day or so. In fact, I had this lady in my ministry after church one day. Her little girl was so excited. She just made something. And she was really pumped up about it. And she's like, oh, I forgot my craft back in the room. And so she goes back and get it. And Stacy's over there like, no, don't bring that craft over here. And this little girl was so proud. And she's like, Mommy, look. And she's like, oh, great, great, great. Okay, you kids, we already started the van. Go out to the van. And as she's walking, there's the trash dumpster. She's like, poof, right in the trash. So that's my note-taking story. So I apologize for that. Okay, so up here you see gumballs. On your table, you'll see gumballs. Those are for you to enjoy. Some of them are really sour, because you probably already found that out. But here's why we're going to use gumballs. And this is the basis and framework that we're going to work with today in boundaries with kids in ministry. No, pop away. Seriously, pop away. That actually helps me. My squirrelness, that's good. Okay, it keeps me fresh. Okay. How many of you are familiar with Orange, the Orange people? Okay, a couple of you. Okay, so cool. So I'm speaking to people who have never seen this before. I saw this video probably 10 years ago. Reggie Joyner did a whole lot of research in children's ministry in his church. And what he found out was we get, on average, per year with a child, 40 hours in our ministry. It's the truth. They've broken it down over a bunch of different denominations, a bunch of different churches, and the numbers are the numbers. Kids will miss church for baseball or basketball or football or whatever the case may be, or cheerleading or dance or whatever, or vacations, they'll miss. And so we do get only an average of 40 hours per year with a child in children's ministry. Is there 40 in here? Oh, so half. We could only find 1,500 gumballs. Okay, so in a two-hour period, she actually went to how many Dollar Trees did you visit today? A lot. Three? Oh, because we call it cramativity at our church, which is like how much stuff can you cram and be creative about it in the last minute, right? So here's last minute. We're doing half. So in here is 20 gumballs. In here is 1,500, and here's the 40 in our church. Let's say this is 40. It's hard to do comparisons here, and that's the 3,000 that they get outside of the church walls. That's with their parents, that's with their teachers, that's with their other influencers. So based on this, how much influence does the church building, or being at the church, how much influence do you think that has on the life of a child? Very little, okay? We would love to think that it has a huge impact on a kid, and there is evidence to show that it does, and we'll get to that. However, we do need to adopt this exile mentality. I love that this morning with Scott. This exile mentality, we can't expect people to come to us. We have to go and immerse ourselves in them. We have to. And so that's our mentality. But we're talking about boundaries with kids, okay? So there's a whole lot to this. Based on this model here, how do we maximize our time then in our church space? That's the big question here. How do we maximize our time in our church space? Several years ago, I sat down with my children's leadership team. How many of you in your churches have children's leadership teams? One? How many of you in here are your children's leader? Your children's pastor leader? Okay, so I'm going to encourage you right now. No, it doesn't even matter how big or small your church is. Get a team of people. You can only do so much, and you're going to need to bounce your ideas off of, two, okay, that'll work. Two's good. That's the ministry team. That's a good team. Two heads are way better than one. Three's even better, right? That's scriptural. Get a team. I'm just telling you that right now. So how do we maximize our time with our kids? So several years ago, I sat down with my ministry team, and I just asked them the question. Here's what we get in a weekly basis with a kid. We get maybe an hour and a half. Maybe. I mean, that's pushing time. Maybe an hour and a half. So what do we want that to look like? Do we want it filled with games? Do we want it filled with non-spiritual stuff? I mean, what do we want that to look like? And so I got this whiteboard out. It was this giant whiteboard. And we just started writing like all these ideas. And we just came up with this framework that we wanted to work in. And here's what we decided. We want them to know that they've just had an encounter with God. We want them to know that they are completely loved, that God has a plan for their life, and He wants to do big things with their life. And so everything that we do, our messages, the way we interact with them, the way we celebrate things in the course of the year, is all built around that framework and that hour and a half. If we can do that, we can maximize, that's called maximizing that 40 hours a year, okay? James 1, 19-27, you guys are familiar with this? What is a pure religion, right? The taking care of orphans and widows in their time of distress. That's the other mentality. that we need to have. We can only teach from what we know. Boundaries, what's the big deal with boundaries? If I had a whiteboard, what I would draw is just a big box with just a little hole in it. I heard this story about the Jesus as the good shepherd. And this picture that we got is a shepherd 2,000 years ago. What they would do is just, you know, they had this wall, right? And the shepherd would literally lay in the opening, the entrance gate of this wall as the protector. And so that's kind of our boundaries. So let's have a little interactive conversation here. What do boundaries like help us with? Like what do they do for us? What do they give us? It keeps us safe. What else?
Boundaries also keep us on track.
Yeah, it keeps us on track. What else?
It can provide a routine that makes kids feel secure.
Okay. Security, safety. There was some research done several years ago by this woman named Karen Purvis. You guys ever heard of Karen Purvis? TBRI, trust-based relational interaction. Anyway, that's a whole nother, like, two semesters worth of work. Here's what she said. The number one thing, this is not what she said, it's the research that backs this up. The number one thing that kids want when they go into any environment, whether that be school or home or church or the ball field, is safety. That's the first thing. And so part of the boundary is creating a safe environment. Safety from adults, safety from each other. Safety from obstacles in the building. I mean, all these things, like safety from like where the bathrooms are, how they even go there. Those are all boundaries to build into your ministries. Three premises. This is actually from Andy Stanley through our Orange Conference that I went to a couple years ago. Three premises for why we need boundaries for awesome kids' environments. His big premise was the church saved my life, okay? Because it did. The church saved my life. It saved your life. The church body of believers, it saves our life. It really, really does. It allows kids to be in a positive environment with our families, even if it was for only an hour and a half. At least that's what it should be. One, the church informs on my conscience. We were created on purpose for a purpose. I believe that wholeheartedly. Two, the church gives us a purpose. Three, the church gives us a context for lasting relationships that matter. I think about some of my friends. All my current friends, they go to church. Or they're associated with the church somehow in my town that I live in. The church serves as a window into God's activity all over the world. That's another reason for having good boundaries. Like I said before, boundaries is a huge discussion, and there really is not enough time. We only have an hour, right? Boundaries are for both kids and your helpers. What do? They keep us safe, they keep us focused, and they keep us out of trouble. So here's what we do. I'm just going to give you an example of what I do. We're just talking about, in this particular example, I'm going to talk about what I do at my church on both Wednesdays and Sundays. One of the best things you can do is just be a really consistent place. Kids love consistency. They thrive in consistency. They thrive knowing that you are going to do what you say you're going to do. And so here's what we do. We have this acronym, God Fun. It's actually GDFN, but I put the O in there in the U, but it's God Fun. That's our acronym, and it stands for this. Give the speaker your attention. That's rule number one. I love simple rules that you can just, this is what we do every week. Simple, simple rules. Give the speaker your attention. Don't be a space invader. Keep your hands and feet to yourself. No kids on kids' laps. That's a really big one. Don't let kids sit on your other kids' laps, even if they're related, because it gives a, you know, you just never know. Kid coming in, they're like, oh, you can sit on their lap. It could lead to something not good. Don't be a space invader. Never leave your seat unless you ask. That's in, I forgot the F. Oh, follow directions. That's our other, just basic, follow directions. Never leave your seat unless you ask. And that way we ask is by raising our hands. Say, Pastor Thomas, can I go to the bathroom? Can I get a drink? Can I go get a tissue? Whatever the case is. Why would I ask them this? Just I'm asking you guys. Why would I tell them to do that first? Raise their hand. What's that?
You know where they're at.
Got to know where they're at, man.
Respect and order.
Absolutely. Respect and order. Don't just get them run around. That creates an environment of chaos. Andy Stanley, the same conference. Create environments that are irresistible. Make it an environment that kids want to come back to. That doesn't always mean painting your walls or getting new carpet or building, you know, these awesome puppet ministries and all this stuff. It could mean that. But what if our environments were so loving and so filled with the Holy Spirit that it was like, I can't not go back there again? Because the person that helps me in my small group, they actually care about what I'm saying. They pray for my needs. They give me hugs when I come in. They give us high fives when we do awesome. The other kids in our groups are like respectful. And if they're not, they don't stay. And I'll get to that in a second. So we create these environments where every quarter or a couple times a quarter, we do these fun nights. Not every Wednesday night is a spiritual night. You can build just really fun nights where all they're doing is having fun because they're associating the church. And this is good because they're associating your church with fun. If you want to be associated with something other than Jesus and God and fun, man, I would love to go to church. It's just fun. And so we create these fun environments. So every quarter we do these fun nights where we set up our Gaga Ball pit. Anybody of you here know what Gaga Ball is? Little octagon shaped. Do some research on Gaga Pit. You got to have a Gaga Pit. Gaga Pit. G-A-G-A-P-I-T. Gaga Pit. Look it up. It'll revolutionize everything. It'll change it. 80 kids going crazy in this arena with a ball. And they can't stop playing it. It's amazing. And then we started doing it at our camp, and it created this tournament environment, and the kids love it. And it, Gaga Pit, man, Gaga Ball, gotta look it up. Nine Square in the Air. Anybody have Nine Square in the Air? I've heard of this before. You guys know what Four Square is? Okay, so Four Square is elevated in the air. It's on these like PVC pipe stilts, except there's nine squares. The kids hit the ball over one of the poles that connect them. It's like a grid of nine squares in the air. They have this little ball. It's like one of those cheapo dollar balls you get at Walmart. You know what I'm talking about? And they like kind of float when you hit them. And they play this game for hours, and they're lined up outside the building because they just love playing this game. Go do some research on some games that are like the popular hit, easy to get games that'll create environments that are irresistible. And then we invested in some inflatable, but it's like a combo inflatable thing. Inflatables are like God's gift to kids. Sometimes I believe that is inflated. Kids love inflatables. They go goo goo gaga over inflatables, especially if they have like characters of animals or something on them. But they love inflatables. So once a quarter, we do this thing called Celebration Fun Nights, and all they do is play. We do like a couple worship songs that they're used to, but the fun upbeat ones, and we get them all fired up, and then we do snacks every night, but we give them special snacks on those nights, and they just go play in the gym and act like wild banshees. But they've earned that because they know in our rules that they don't get out of line for a night, and if they do, we have, sorry, I told you I was going to bounce around a little bit. I'm going to back up just a couple steps. In our rules, our God fun rules, here's what I tell them. If you can't abide by these rules, it's three strikes rule. If you can't abide by these rules, I have a refocus room, and I have two ladies that run our refocus room. My wife runs a refocus room for our fifth and sixth graders. And then I have two other ladies that run our refocus room for our kindergarten through fourth grade. If they can't abide by the rules, they are removed from the room. And if they can't abide the rules in the refocus room, then they go home. And they all know that. I had to send this many kids home last year. Zero. Nobody. But here's why we do that. Some of you might think, man, should you send a kid home from church? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Here's the example I give. You guys remember in the 1980s? How many of you are from St. Louis? So you guys know TWA? You guys remember TWA, the airline TWA? Okay. So in the 80s, they had all these hijackings. I mean, there was this hijack city, and I don't mean to bash on TWA because it's not their fault. But they had all these hijackings. And I remember this one in particular when I was a kid, 1985. I think they made a movie out of it or something. These three guys hijacked this plane. I think they ended up killing one of the guys on the plane or whatever. But there was over 100 people freaking out because they couldn't do anything because three guys were holding it up. In children's ministry, that's a really extreme example, but that's what we call it in our children's ministry. Don't let a kid be a hijacker, because that's what they'll do. If you give them an environment to hijack, they're going to do it. Some of the kids that you'll have in your ministries are brave enough that they'll just be like complete hijackers, and they'll just hijack the entire night. For a couple years, I let that happen. And here's what ends up happening as a result if you don't remove kids from your building. The kids that really want to be there and the adults that want to be there to help, they'll stop coming. If you don't believe it, you keep doing it because they'll stop. And then the kids that really want to be there and love to be loved on, but they're not because little Billy over here can't keep his hands off of kids and he's just running amok, they'll leave. They just won't come back. And we've seen that. And we had to put a stop to this. That's what this children's council is such a big deal, because they sat me down one day and I said, I want to critique. And it's okay to have someone critique you all the time. I want to critique. What are we not doing? And they're like, it is nuts. We need to have some of these kids sent home. And that's not to be mean. That's so that we don't have a hostage crisis on Wednesday nights, on Sunday mornings, where all we're doing is spending all of our energy and time and resources on that kid over there. Now, with that said, that's why I do after school mentoring. That's why I go to the schools and meet at lunches and go to target time at the schools. That's why I meet one-on-one with kids. That's why I'm a part of Big Brothers Big Sisters, because I don't believe that you just kick a kid out and then you never have a relationship with that's not good. That's not Jesus. That's the immersion piece. But we only get that certain period of time in the building. The immersion piece is going and doing, getting involved in the schools, eating lunch with the kids at the schools, meeting after school mentoring program, whatever it is that you have to do. So we would remove a kid from building, and then on Tuesdays I would meet with them at the church. So they're still getting church time. Just different, small groups. Some kids don't thrive in a big group. They're like, man, uh-uh. They just do not do well in large group. So they're one-on-one or one-on-four, that's perfect for them. They thrive in that environment. Never give up on kids. That's where I'm going with that, is we never give up on them. Yes, we do remove them from the night, but we never give up on them. Be clear, clear, clear. Clarity is the key of boundaries. Clarity is the key with a lot of stuff. If you're not clear, or if you're clear as mud, you're going to get mud. If you're clear as mud with your rules, you're going to get mud. If you didn't specify something, they're going to find a way to mess it up, and then it's not their fault. It's yours because you weren't clear at the beginning. Here's a good quote. I was looking through notes this morning. My wife found this. It was really good. This is one of the instructors for the master's program that I attended, Kara Powell. Anyone familiar with Kara Powell or her books? Really neat lady. Our teaching and environments must be clear enough to help kids win on Friday nights, but caring enough to sit with them on Saturday morning when they feel like they've lost. Let that one sit in for a second. Yeah, that's a good one. Here's another one. How you're loved will always impact how you live, but how you live will never change how you are loved. And so, how many of you have a bus ministry in your church? Praise God. How many of you go without buses? How many of you go pick kids up that aren't connected? Okay. We have, that's a lot of our ministry, is bus ministry. If you need rules on bus ministry and how to maintain a bus ministry, how to even start one, I got resource upon resource upon resource. We've been doing bus ministry at our church for 30 years, probably. We have a lot of those kids. But we've built our expectations, and we've been very clear with our expectations on how they're supposed to behave. That when they get there, some of them turn it on. They know. They maybe jacked around on the bus or something like that, or maybe before they got on. But as soon as they get on that bus, they know. Because we're consistent. And that's the other piece of this, too, is being consistent with the rules that you lay out. Do what you say you're going to do. If you say the rule is you're getting removed and you will go home, regardless of that kid throws a fit, you take them home. They will be back. If your environment's awesome and all their friends go there, they'll be back. We have kids that will literally, even if we kicked them out for, just saying this hypothetically, even if we kicked them out for several weeks, they would show up every Wednesday beating the doors. I want in, you know, but because that's the environment that we create for them. What time are we at? I don't have my phone on me. Oh, okay, 1:42. Wow. Time flies. Okay. Here's another thing. This is just from the thing this morning. I remember it was Jason talking about a grant. There's a grant for the Missouri District? Take advantage of that thing. Like, take advantage of that. A few years ago, and this is why I'm saying this, because we've seen a huge, on the Joplin District, we've seen this come back to us in a huge. We had some money sitting in our SDMI account for several years, not knowing what to do about it. And when he said dream big, like literally dream big, God will provide the resources if it's from God, and if it's big enough, you know, like, sometimes we don't dream too like big enough because we're like, well, if it's not big, I mean, it's got to be huge, man. Big, dream huge. So we had some money sitting around, $14,000. We had $14,000 sitting around in an account that hadn't been used in years. So several of us got together and we're like, hey, what if we got this trailer and we filled it with inflatables and a popcorn machine and a snow cone machine and a sound system, what would happen? Year one, 90, we have 84 churches on our district. It was used over 90 times. And we saw like over 200 people come to know the Lord, specifically because of the trailers. So we, in faith, we purchased another trailer for another 14 grand, and we pulled money from other sources. And those things are used so much you can barely rent, you know, check them out. And that's why that's like a dreaming big thing. We're seeing people come to the Lord and families coming to the Lord because they see a carnival outside and that piques their interest. They're like, well, I want to go see what this is all about. So then they do. It gets people into your environment. Environment, I can't emphasize that enough. Environments are a huge piece. If you can get a piece of this grant, you'd be amazed what paint, like even cheap stuff, paint, carpet squares, reclaimed pallets. I mean, you get some creative people in your churches together to start dreaming up some stuff of what you want your environments to look like. Do it. Take advantage of that grant. Take advantage of the money. Go, because you'll get some kids. Like, you create an environment, or you'll get some families, and they come in and they've never seen your church before. Maybe they have. And they visited before and maybe it looked bland or something, and then all of a sudden you update a room or something and their eyes explode. Like, they just explode. It creates environments that kids and families want to be a part of. So I would encourage you to take advantage of that. This is a huge conversation, boundaries of kids in ministry. I don't know that I've said a whole lot with this, but is there any questions that we can discuss? Yes. She asked the question, what is in our refocus room? Our refocus room is not a very fun environment. So, I mean, it's in a preschool classroom. I mean, it's just in a basic classroom. And what they're required to do, sometimes literally what they're required to do, and then this is going to seem like punishment or something, and it's not. But there's like exercises that we'll make them do, like with their hands or with their mind. They'll have something where maybe they're just doing a color sheet. Maybe all of what they need is just to get away from the big environment for a second to just do something mundane. Or maybe it's just little Lego pieces or something that they're putting together. One of the things I learned about from this TBRI training that my wife and I went to is the first question that you ask a kid when they're acting up is, what do you need? Sometimes they won't be able to tell you, but if they know you genuinely care about what they need, you're not just saying that to get them out of your face, they'll tell you. The case in point with the refocus room, we had a little girl, her brother is in fifth grade, and she's in kindergarten or first grade. Well, brother is caregiver at home. And he came to church, and they come really regularly. And she would like act out. But the reason why she would act out is because brother's going upstairs, and she doesn't know where he's going. She has no idea that he's going upstairs. She thinks that maybe he's leaving. And is he coming back? What's going on here? So then she's acting up. So how we got to that is, what do you need? How can I help you? Well, I want my brother. We went upstairs and got brother. Brother explained to her that he's upstairs in a classroom. That's the 5 minute of refocus. Sometimes just asking a question, what do you need? Maybe the kid's hungry. Give him a snack, for goodness sake. Or a drink or something. Not necessarily, I mean, we do snacks on Wednesday nights, so everybody gets one, but maybe they need an extra one. Maybe they really didn't eat. Now that creates a whole nother chasm of issues. We need to start making some calls to DCF. Those are questions that you guys just have to figure out you're all mandatory reporters, by the way, just FYI. So that's kind of what's in there. Sometimes it's a little game. Sometimes my wife brings color crayons, Legos. What else do you have in there? Yeah, they just want to talk. That's, well, especially with the fifth and sixth graders, they just need to get their words out. 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes. We set the timer, 5 minutes. And if they've shown our refocus people that they can handle it, then they go, sometimes they go back, and sometimes, the truth be told, we've had some kids, they just need to talk all their stuff. So they don't, we give them the 5 minute thing. Once the 5 minutes is up, they can rejoin the group. We've had some kids that are like, the river starts flowing because stuff's going on at home or outside of school or in school, and they just need a one-on-one talk. And that's what that's for too. It's not always a behavior thing. It's sometimes it's just, what's going on, man? Let's talk about that. Do you have another question? Absolutely.
I love the kids I work with.
Yes.
But where I find a problem is with kids that spend so much time at church, like their parents.
Yes.
Very involved.
Yes. Pastor's kids. PKs, man.
Like, say, like I would say something to one of them, and he's like, I'm not to listen because my mom's here all the time.
Sure.
Or whatever.
Yeah, PKs are a tough one, man.
It's
sometimes it's the regular attenders, but I'm going to use PKs as an example because my kids are all PKs, and so I can use them as an example. Believe it or not, this year the first two kids I kicked out of Wednesday night into the refocus room were my own kids. I'm not lying. TJ, refocus room. And all the kids are like, he kicked his own kid out, And Sadie was next on the chopping block, and he's kicking his own kids out. I guess we better be quiet now. He's not messing around. No. Treat him the same way as everybody else. And do not back down from that conversation if you need to have it with your lead pastor. Our lead pastor, and he and I are really close, good friends, and there's sometimes where he'll ask me for a critique or he'll ask me for things, and he'll tell me both, vice versa. I don't tell him everything. He doesn't tell me everything that's bothering him. Those are things sometimes we just need to bounce off of God. But just tell him. I mean, have those conversations. Don't hold back. Don't treat them any different. If they say, well, you know, I don't have to listen to you. Yeah, you do. And then bring mom in. I mean, that's where my face changed from Pastor Nice Face to step into my office, right? And that's where you kind of turn into principal mode, because you have to. And they have to know that you can't just, they can't run on you or run all over you or treat you differently because they're there all the time. Now, that's the hard thing. There's a lot of truth to that. My kids are at church all the time. And that wears on them. I know it does, because they're there all the time. And I know it wears on Kyle's kids, too. They're there all the time. And we live there all the time. And so they're just so used to it. That's like a second living room to them, you know? But on those times where, and maybe these are side conversations where they just need an understanding. During church time, when we're having the church time, you can't be that way. Outside of that, awesome, man. You want to run around the church and act like a total fool? That's between you and your parents or whatever, and those are off church hours, whatever. But when it's time to have group, I'm boss, I'm authority, and ask them that. Who's the boss? Who's the authority? I've asked plenty of kids that. This is our TBRI training. Who's the boss? Well, no, I mean, for real, who's the boss? Well, you are. Okay, if I'm the boss, and you're not, I said, that's what you do. And more often than not, they'll do it. Once they recognize who's boss and who's authority, that's one of the things I think we have a fault in, is we never establish who's boss or who's authority or who's the rule maker and the rule enforcer. We kind of just leave that up to assumption, and assumption's never good. We all know the assume joke, right? Clear. It's all about being clear. Clarity, 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 clarity. Everything you do is completely clear. And I've learned that because I've been clear as mud before. Yes?
Can you just run through your schedule of activities on Wednesday nights? Like, what does it look like?
She asked the question, what does your schedule look like on Wednesday nights? We do. I do the story process. How many of you are familiar with Tell the Story? It's Nazarene, it's Woody Stevens. I'm coming to Pastor Ron's church tomorrow to do it for his people. Are the ones that are running, Candace and Trey Brooks, they do Quote to Engage, they are story trainers. I do that process, so here's what it looks like. We do pre-games, as kids are getting there. I have these tables that we've built, and they have like Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, and they're built into the table. Like, I just took an old brown table and literally hot glued and screwed down some Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, okay? And then all these game pieces, we just use Legos, because we have another table that's just Legos, straight Legos and Kinex blocks. So pre-worship, I have music going, and they can play table games. We do some games on the screen. We have, I have this software, it's called DYM, Downloadable Youth Ministry. And they have these really cool like interactive games that you can do on a computer and put them up on a projector or flat screen. So sometimes the kids are doing that. That's from 6:15 to 6:30 or 6:10 to 6:30. I do countdown videos. Everything is all about, preparing them for the next step of the night, right? And so countdown videos, if you don't have them, you need to get some, because it does count down for them. They kind of know what's coming. And then once you get into this consistent mode where you do the same thing every week, countdown videos. So countdown videos, then we do worship, prayer, worship, and if it's a pre-story video, sometimes I'll use that, or pre-story skit. Usually we hit the story up at about 6:45, and we do story until 7 to 7:05, and that's when we break into small groups. And our small groups are between 10 and 15 kids in a small group. And we have small group leaders for them. They go through a series of questions, and that's through our story training that I do with my people. But We do a series of questions, and then they have snack, and then they either get back on the bus or their parents come pick them up or whatever. So that's kind of our night. So 6:10, 6:15 to 6:30, 6:30, 6:45, 6:45 to 7:05, and then 7:05 to the rest of the night is small group discussion, prayer time, and snacks.
Are groups mixed ages, like 15 kids or 10 kids, or do kindergarten
group, fourth, fifth grade? Yes, they use, here's how we split our groups up. Kindergartners go with their kindergarten teacher. I like kindergartners to be together. First and second graders are together. Third and fourth grade boys are a group, and third and fourth grade girls are a group. When they're in that second, first and second grade, mixed ages, co-age stuff is okay. When they get to those older ages, I kind of like to split them into gender groups. So we do third and fourth grade boys, third and fourth grade girls. And then in a completely different part of children's ministry area is our fifth and sixth graders, and their night is different than ours. They do worship at the beginning, and they go right into the story and discussion, and sometimes afterwards they actually get to go to the gym to play like a game of some sort that reinforces the message. But fifth and sixth graders are together, and we were splitting most of the year into fifth grade as a small group and sixth grade as a small group. I have security people, so we have check-in people. These are part of the boundaries. So I have security people, and truth be told, people have told me this, sometimes they're not nice. That's okay sometimes too. There are some nights that you wish that your people weren't that nice, and I'm not really joking on that one. Sometimes you just need people to say how it is. And sometimes our security people just do. They don't need to be down the hallway, so they'll get after them about it. You don't need to be down the hallway. Krista was mean. Don't go down that hallway. And they don't do it anymore because they don't like hearing Crystal's voice, right? So we have security guards. Darren, he's a local farmer, and he's gigantic. He's big. And I love that he's like a bouncer, but he's like a huge teddy bear. Nobody knows this about Darren. But he's probably the biggest guy in church. Not even joking. He's huge. And he's strong. He's built like a brick house, man. He's big. But he's like the cuddliest teddy bear ever. But when he speaks, doesn't always come out like a teddy bear. But he's one of my security guard guys that he checks name tags. They have to have a name tag before they can go upstairs to the fifth and sixth grade room. He'll like grab the kids and has these huge hands. So just reinforces that you need to check in. That's the rule. You need to check in. If you don't, Darren. I'll just get Darren. Then he'll make you check in, and then he does. And then they check in. So they all know. Like kids, you can tell. Like when they're on the bus, especially if it's a new